This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin coming to you for the final elevated event of the season coming off of the U.S. Open. And J.J. Spawn won. Yeah, J.J. Spawn won. I'm sure you saw that on all of the highlights out there. But unfortunately for me, that capped what was the worst tournament for me in 3 years from a monetary standpoint and whatever. You know what's funny is we did our, me and Humans put together our final thoughts. It was posted over on VSiN, and some guy, cleverly enough, went into, I guess, the picks page, and it showed all of like the losses for me and said, yeah, I don't need your recap. And it like showed all of the losses or whatever. And I said, click the link first and then get back to me. And he's like, yeah, I don't need to get your opinion on this or whatever, or something like that. And I was like, ha, you dumbass. I already talked shit about myself and you, before I beat you to the punch. If you just read the article, I talk shit about myself. And like, you're sitting here talking shit to me. You're late to the party. Like, you missed it. You're sorry, buddy. I beat you to it. And it's in writing. So, yeah, it was a horrible, horrible, horrible tournament for me. I did add Bob McIntyre live. I texted Kelly on after round one, heading into round two. Did not think I was going to be live at all with Bob McIntyre down the stretch. But he goes under par where basically everybody else is going over par. And, you know, had J.J. Spawn not pike two drives on 17 and 18, maybe we get a playoff and maybe I could have salvaged something for this tournament. But Wes, it was a complete and utter bloodbath for me, capped by the fact that I had a massive top 20 bet on Corey Connors, who hurts his wrist and has to withdraw from the tournament. And so that was like the ultimate kick in the nuts where I'm just sitting there. I'm like, okay, this is just
kind of like the memorial for me, which was really horrible. This was not good either. This was a losing event. Couple placements got home with Victor Hovland, Xander Schauffele, John Rahm back into the top 10 with the solid Sunday round. But Victor Hovland was my only real contender in this thing. And I actually did have optimism going into Sunday. I thought, you know what? He's right there. He's hit his irons well all week. He is right there. Just make a bunch of pars, which that's what it turned into, even though Spawn goes birdie-birdie and wins by two over Robert McIntyre. But it's just make pars all day. These guys are going to make mistakes, and a lot of them did. Adam Scott, Sam Burns, Tyrrell Hatton, Carlos Ortiz. You know, all these guys that made mistakes kind of tumbled down the leaderboard. And I got to credit J.J. Spawn, though. He did hang in there. He shot 40 on the front nine. So he shot five over par on the front nine, and then comes in with a 32 to shoot two over par, and that was certainly good enough to give him the victory. J.J. Spawn was number two in putting, number three in scrambling. So, you know, he played solid enough, I think. And if you do one thing really well, which is either putt it or keep it in the fairway, that you were going to win this thing. So not my best from a wagering standpoint. I'm not going to join the cacophony of complaints necessarily in terms of about the tournament, because it's like, it's the U.S. Open. It's supposed to be hard. This was a classical U.S. Open. This was not a U.S. Open where you shoot 15 under like at Erin Hills to win the thing. This is what it was going to be, where score was going to be just under par or right at even par, and that's exactly how it turned out.
Yeah, I already talked to Kelly about this. I did my bitching. I'm actually on the opposite side of this. I thought this tournament was trash. Like if 156 of the best golfers in the world tee it up and it takes a 64-foot miracle on the 72nd hole for one guy to shoot under par, I think the course failed us, and I think that the setup failed us. I'm okay for a hard test for these golfers, but nobody played well, and that makes our job impossible, because how do you handicap a tournament in which nobody played well? There was no skill set that stood out. There was no, it wasn't for bombers. It wasn't for accurate guys. It wasn't for anything. It ended up J.J. Spawn made more putts than everybody else. He was second in the field in putting. And in a weird way, that's what it all kind of came down to. Can you get a favorable lie out of the rough? Did you get lucky enough that your ball sat up as opposed to got buried? What weird angle are you on comparatively to somebody else? Where did your ball end up in the bunker as opposed to where it ended up for somebody else in the bunker? So I don't know. It seemed like it was a lot of luck to me, Kelly. I don't know where you fall on all of this, but yeah, I am on the camp of I thought the course setup was kind of trash.
This conversation, because this is like me talking politics. I'm very down the middle between both of you, I guess, because I think you have to separate. From a betting standpoint, it sucks. I agree with everything you just said, Matt. Looking back, I broke a lot of my own rules for the U.S. Open where it's like, you know, I made one miss the cut parlay that got close to hitting. I should have bet more of those. Like, those were a way to profit this week. What I didn't do was ratchet down my bet size too much, is what I usually do with these tougher tournaments when you know variance is just going to come into play. And, like, we knew that ahead of time. We knew this was going to play tough, and I still went at it pretty hard. So that I'm kind of beating myself up over. I think from a betting standpoint, I agree with you, Matt. From a golf standpoint of just like a golf viewership fanhood, I still don't love it, but okay, if I'm going to sit here, what I've been saying all week is if I'm going to sit here during the year and complain about 25 birdie fests that we got to talk about throughout the PGA Tour schedule, then it's hard for me to complain about one single tournament being too tough. So in reality, the whole PGA Tour schedule, I would like to just be more towards the middle altogether. We don't have U.S. Opens that play this hard, and we don't have that many birdie fests. But I think as a golf fan, if I'm going to complain about all the birdie fests, then I have to be okay with this every once in a while. But it does suck as a bettor, and it was very difficult betting. Although, Wes, you brought it up. Just to recap real quick, this was actually a little bit better for me. It was only a small loser for me because I got really lucky on backdoor John Rahm top 10 and backdoor Xander Schauffele top 20. That's for sure.
You could
those
maybe make
my
it.
Two biggest
I'm sorry. I was going to say you could maybe make an argument that they should have stopped play, though, on Sunday because it was the weather. I think it was the weather even more than the course setup because you're getting, like, these puddles, it's like, well, what are you going to do? Because Sam Burns basically hit out of a puddle. And it cost him the tournament because I felt like Spahn was a deserved winner, but I felt like Sam Burns probably should have won because he held the lead for the majority of the weekend. And just I think the weather, I think that's where maybe the USGA could have stepped in and say, okay, you know, let's take care of this. If you got to finish on Monday, then you got to finish on Monday. But, you know, I typically prefer hard setups in the U.S. Open, and that's what we got.
I was shocked. I mean, that was like right when we were on the phone. I was like, are they really going to try to finish this thing? Like, I was kind of surprised. I didn't just call it and push it off till Monday when they were in that. I thought they were going to be racing daylight anyways. And then, yeah, they come back out there, Wes, and Sam Burns should have never had to hit a damn ball out of a damn puddle.
Yeah, I mean, look, the rules of golf, again, remain ridiculous. Like, I mean, for two different guys to come over and see what was going on with all of that and both rule that, no, it's not standing water, so you got to hit out of it. It's like, yeah, but if you press down slightly, water gushes out of the ground. I mean, like it's basically fucking standing water. Like, I mean, you're like, what are you talking about? You know? And so to me, it's again, the rules of golf remain absolutely ridiculous sometimes through all of this. And I mean, that was now. Did Burns become a mental midget in that situation? Absolutely, right? Because as soon as both of those guys ruled against him, he lost it, right? I mean, like, and then the chip afterwards and the whole nine yards, like, it just was a giant spiral out of control after that, and which, again, that's where we're giving JJ Spahn props because he definitely could have spiraled out of control after that first few holes on the final round, and he decided to put it together on the back nine and do all that. So it was... To me, I don't think because I play a whole bunch of golf that it makes me a better golf handicapper. I don't think that at all. But what I do think it has done is because I played so many different courses and played some of the hardest courses in the world, actually. I mean, I've played Whistling Straits and I've played Kiawa and I've played Carnoustie and I've played like all these courses that are incredibly hard. I think a fair setup is more what I'm looking for in all of this, and I don't think that was a very fair setup the way that they had that out there. Rough was way too penal the way that all went down with everything. And so, again, you had to be lucky. If you hit it in the rough and it was sitting up, then good for you. And if you hit it in the rough and it was sitting down, then you were as a penalty stroke. You know, it's like, that's just, I don't know, it takes some of the skill out of it to me. That's just, it's luck. Like, how did the ball land in the rough? And, like, to me, that's just not how I want it to be to be played.
I am very glad from just a result standpoint, though. Like, you guys both said it, but J.J. Spahn went out and won the thing. Like, I'm just very glad we're not sitting here after the U.S. Open, you know, where somebody just kind of backed their way into it because everybody else fell out. I mean, Spahn went out there and did what he needed to do to win that tournament at the end.
Like, I'll put it this way. The drive on 17, a lot of people were obviously driving well on 17. That hole was giving up birdies left and right. I thought the drive on 18, I thought the butthole might pucker. You know, like, yep. I thought, like, you know, you're standing there and knowing as long as you can par this thing, you're going to win the U.S. I thought we could see some real butthole puckering going on there, and instead he just piped it right down the middle as good as you could possibly hit it. And I was like, okay, that's legit right there. I mean, those are the
shots that matter the most. The only shot we're going to see forever about J.J. Spahn winning a major is the last putt that he hit. But those are the shots that matter the most.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. That putt didn't even have to fall, right?
It didn't even need to fall.
Two putt to win. Like, yeah, everyone's like, that putt didn't even have to fall. The drive was what was the hard part. I mean, like, you're staying on the tee box knowing that, like, your hands are probably sitting here doing like this, like, knowing that, like, dude, if I put this in the rough, I could lose this thing, or if I hit the fairway, I'm probably going to win. Just absolutely fantastic with all of that. With that, you do see some, like you said, Kelly, some people did backdoor along the way that you know, I think people are going to pull away that they had a bad tournament. But, I mean, Scottie Scheffler, T7, John Rahm, T7, Xander Schauffele, T12, Brooks Koepka, T12. Weirdly enough, because of his final round 3-under, Rory top 20.
Yep.
Like, it felt like Rory, you know, it felt like Rory had the worst tournament in the history of the world after making it on the number, he 3-unders, 67 on Sunday, ends up inside the top 20 in all of this. So some of those dudes, I think the perception isn't going to really match reality. What we have is Scottie Scheffler just top 10 in yet another major.
Yeah, it's wild. Who's your guy's clown of the week? Because everybody kind of made a clown of themselves out there. There was a lot of opportunities. You could go with Rory talking. You could go. Didn't Shane Lowry forget to mark his ball or something at some point? And then I think the best one, my clown of the week, would be Wyndham Clark beating up the clubhouse, apparently. That was smashing windows in the clubhouse. That's a way to act like a
probably
right
Bryson
there.
DeChambeau did not expect he was going to miss the cut, and he did miss it pretty solidly. But, you know, didn't really, you know, make an ass out of himself in any kind of way. Like Shane Lowry, who I really like, kind of has, you know, of late, yelling at marshals, yelling at the caddy, what you said about Wyndham Clark, and then Rory not wanting to speak to the media. You know, after all this, and this has been going on for about the last month, really, since the PGA. So, yeah, some guys, you know, maybe Scotty's got them all a flutter here with how much he's winning lately, and that they haven't been able to beat him, even though he wasn't able to get it done last week.
From a stat profile perspective, how about I'll go with Colin Morikawa,
who was
number one in the field in approach, number one in the field tee to green, dead last in the guys that made the cut in putting.
Yeah.
Literally 66 out of 66 in putting. 18th around the green, but 29th off the tee of the people that made the cut. Like, it just, you look at this stat profile and like, dude, if he could have even remotely putted, I mean, like, even remotely putted, he at least, I mean, he's not going to win the thing because he was so bad, whatever. But I mean,
that was,
but if you had a top 20,
that was, by the way,
yeah,
the
exactly.
putting performance
exactly.
of his
he's
career
top 10
on the PGA
thing.
Tour. I think he lost a little bit less than 9 strokes, but maybe more on him later in this episode of Long Shots.
Oh, the long tees coming from Wes Winterold's right there. Yeah. I think that, the other thing for me, if I'm just going to any sort of takeaway with all of this is live betting this tournament ended up probably being a fool's errand for most people out there. I know there was just a ton of bets that were getting added left and right. People going, if I do this or take this, or maybe I'll take this and doing this and whatever and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, ended up being J.J. Spahn the one thing anyway. Lot of money getting flushed down the toilet there in the live betting market as well, which I'm sure the books had a
there are some times, and because I was asked, like, okay, Wes, who you adding? Who you adding? It was like, there are sometimes you kind of, you know, got to eat your losses a little bit. You know, if you had multiple guys in contention, that's one thing. But when you got, like, one bullet, you know, I'm not going to add anymore. I don't feel good about how I handicapped the tournament or certainly what the results ended up being. You know, I thought the process was right, but the results were not. So it's like, I don't want to add all these guys where it's like, I'm going to have to add, like, five or six guys. And then you got to proportion it, and then you got to do the math and see, okay, I break even here, I make a little here, so... Sometimes, you know, I know people want to get involved. And if you don't have a lot of exposure going in, there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But sometimes when you know it's just not your tournament, you just got to eat it and hope to get what you can out of it.
No, totally. I think Matt, like, I think that was overall well said. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people. I actually made out okay. I had Victor Hovland with a live top 10 that covered me. But like you're talking about, Wes, I was firing bullets, outright bullets. And it was, what was it, Friday? I think it was Friday, Matt. We bet Shoffley, and I texted him. I was like, I'm done. Like, that's it. Like, I've already taken my kicks, and it was only Friday afternoon. I'm like, I'm adding Shoffley at 25-1 to win this. And, like, that's it. Because like you just said, Wes, like, it's... I had seen enough golf by then where it's, you just got to stop. Like, there is, this could, you knew it was going to be a roller coaster ride through the entire weekend, and there was no reason to be, chasing money and throwing more good money after bad.
Yeah, I did play three live outrights. I played Xander, I played Bob McIntyre, and then Thomas Dietrich. Bob McIntyre after round one, sitting at even par before he had, the books again with the algorithms before he had even teed off on Friday had drifted all the way out to like 65-1, and he was sitting at even par, and he had a pretty good stat profile in round one, where I thought, you know, hey, Bob McIntyre, we love his irons. Like, you know, maybe he's going to improve on those irons, right? Where he was after round one, it was like 66th in the field in those off approach. And so I thought there was some upside there in adding him and whatever. Didn't really think it was going to have a snowball chance in hell of actually cashing for me after a couple rounds. But, it was just a absolutely miserable betting tournament for me. And, again, I don't know, putting a bow on this, I don't know how you handicap that tournament properly. You know, whether you like the setup or not, whether you like the outcome or not, I don't know how you handicap a tournament like that, because again, there was no rhyme or reason as to what worked, what didn't, what whatever. I mean, it was basically just make the least amount of mistakes and hope that you ran pure on some of the other things that came in there. So, I mean, if you have the JJ Spawn ticket, good on you, but I think you probably are looking back on it going, I still ran pretty pure. Sam Burns had to play like complete ass on Sunday for me to get that thing home, you know?
Yep. Yep.
All right. So off to our final.
What?
I can't believe it, right?
Well, it's like, you know, and I was going to say something about that. Why don't they just have one a month? You know, okay, here's a signature event in January. Here's one in February. Have the players in March move Bay Hill to April, you know, and have one, you know, all the way through August. Why not just spread this out instead of condensing everything so much here? And I just feel like they've done a really poor job. Maybe the new man that's going to be in charge of the PGA replacing Jay Monahan at the end of 2026 can rectify that.
Yes.
And that's a big story. I'm glad you brought that up, Wes. I mean, that was supposed to be Roger Goodell's heir apparent, right? Like, PGA Tour able to grab him from the NFL. That is... it's pretty big. I don't know where this whole, you and I talked about it a bit the other day, Wes. I'm like, I have no idea where we're at with this whole Live PGA Tour merger. The more this goes on, the less I feel like anything's going to come of it. And eventually we're going to have these Live guys just kind of finding their way back to the PGA Tour, unless you're one of those guys who's just not that good enough to really compete to win on the PGA Tour, and you'll still gladly take the money and stay. But I don't really have much hope for that getting done anytime soon, and I think the PGA Tour is starting to make other plans.
Yeah, I mean, he spoke on it today, actually, and just basically said, look, I got to learn more about it. We'll figure out what's going on. But It was this roundabout way of saying, like, I'm kind of going to focus on what we got going on here.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
I missed that. Good. That's what I would do if I was them, too. Like, yeah. This is... I think you've heard some players that have been a bit more outspoken recently, right? I mean, bro, we're getting those vibes from Brooks and Rahm and Bryson, and so they kind of miss this competition.
Yeah, he just was like, he's like, look, I obviously have more to learn about all of this and everything, but he's like, I'm really just focused on what we've got going on here and growing our fans and growing the game with us and et cetera, and yada, yada. He said all the right things, I think, in his statement, which is, you know, I like where the tour is at, but we still need to do some stuff to reach out and grow things and whatever and all of that. And I hope he's smart enough, or at least has smart enough people around him, to see just how popular all of this social media and internet golf has become and all of these dudes, and figure out a way to get the tour more into the social side of things, into the YouTube side of things, into all the different stuff like that. Because, dude, some of these Grant Horvat videos that this guy puts out get more views than all the live events combined. Yeah. like all the days of the live tournaments combined. He's getting more views on YouTube, you know, than these are. So some stuff to be learned, and hopefully he can get that done. But we head to TPC River Highlands.
Yeah, Hartford, Connecticut, for the Travelers Championship, formerly a long time known as the Greater Hartford Open. So what we're going to see, 72 players in the signature event that we mentioned earlier. Cromwell, Connecticut, about 12 miles south of Hartford. It is the shortest course that they have played so far this year, 6844 as a par 70. People remember, of course, the lowest round in PGA Tour history was shot here in 2016 by Jim Furyk, who shot a 58 in the final round. So birdies can be had here on this course, but it's not a course that you necessarily overpower. You don't necessarily take driver. In fact, you're clubbing down a lot. You know, you're hitting three metal, or you're hitting hybrid, or you're hitting longer irons, because you got relatively tight fairways, tree lined here. Wind is the main defense. If it blows, it's not anticipated very much wind this week. It's actually played a lot easier the last 2 years. If you look at the score, it used to be kind of like mid teens under par would win this thing. Scotty Scheffler won this at 22 under last year, and Keegan Bradley won it at 23 under the year before. So, you know, kind of an interesting little Pete Dye course, originally designed by him in 1984. Only five water holes, about 69 bunkers, not a ton of bunkers, because they wanted to remove it because they wanted to create more like short little pitch and wedge shots into the green. Fairways are bent POA, kind of a Kentucky bent fescue mix in the rough. Rough is about 4 inches thick here, so you don't want to be in that stuff necessarily. Greens, 5,000 foot square feet on average, fifth smallest on tour. Average on the stem, bent POA. This POA, of course, is a little bit different in the Northeast. It's not like what you see at Torrey Pines or Pebble Beach or a lot of the California courses where it's bumpy. It runs a little bit more pure here. Not really a prototype that has won at this event. You've seen longer hitters win here, the Bubba Watsons, the Dustin Johnsons, and those guys, but you've also seen kind of slap hitters win here. Russell Knox, Ken Duke, Ches Reavy, guys that are a little bit more approach-oriented than they certainly are off the tee. So, you know, very interesting course here, though. Like I said, par 70. There's that drivable one on 15 that is 296. Where you will see eagles there, but you'll see about as many double bogeys. So it is risk reward. It's Pete Dye golf. He likes to tempt you to hit towards the trouble because that gives you a better approach into the green. If you play conservative, then you have a tougher approach into the green. So that's what most Pete Dye courses like to do. Other Pete Dye courses on the tour, TPC Sawgrass, TPC Louisiana, Harbortown, where the RBC Heritage is. So plenty of Pete Dye links out there, and then some other correlations that are the shorter courses on tour: Colonial, Pebble Beach, Sedgefield, you know, and then the other Pete Dye designs, probably what you want to look at this week.
Yeah, Kelly, as you started to dig in a little bit more, did anything stick out to you about this course?
Yeah, I think from a handicapping standpoint, it's you know, it's one we've seen a fair amount, which is kind of nice after last week. Let's go back to a course that we know, that we have some history on, and we can really look at some stats. Like Wes just said, I mean, it's going to be fairway finders this week, right? Distance isn't going to matter as much, although I shouldn't say that. We've seen it come into play, but you're going to have to go less than driver on some holes, like Wes said. Rough is going to be penal. You're going to have some small greens you got to play around the green play, super important at this course. Second toughest on tour last year to gain around the greens, so that will be pretty important. But then it's going to be a lot of wedges and short irons into this into these greens, so we'll see guys firing at these pins and putting up some low scores.
Yeah, I it's an interesting deal for me. I tended to lean against driving distance this week for me, so I'm interested to see what you guys did as far as modeling standpoint. Scotty Scheffler is playing the event, so as you know, anytime Scotty Scheffler is in an event, Scotty Scheffler is, in fact, your short shot. So Scotty Scheffler coming in that you can find a 3-1 out there, it looks like, at Bet365. They are
I saw over 3-1 somewhere, but now I don't remember where.
Yeah, it looks like you can get a 3-1 if you're in a Bet365 market, so that seems to be the best number out there on him. But it's your, you know, after that, it's your typical, you know, it's your Rorys, Collins and things and stuff like that. And all of the guys that we've been betting all year long are kind of falling all in the same odds place, you know, kind of in that 30, 40, 50-ish run where, you know, all these guys that we've literally, you've heard us talk about a million times here on the podcast.
Get ready
all,
again.
Yeah, are all right in there. At the top of the odds board, you do have Rory, who again now is out to 12-1 after his, I guess you said again, air quote, poor performance this past week. I mean, he did at least make the cut and figure out a way to get into the top 20.
He was hitting so tee boxes, man. He was all kind of ticked off on Friday afternoon and somehow made the cut.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, and so, but you know, there are some of these guys who had really poor performances out there, namely Cantlay, Fleetwood, Justin Thomas, like these are all dudes, Sepp Straka. These are all guys that were, you know, pretty high on a lot of our boards and stuff and couldn't get it done. Ludwig could fall in that category as well. So
Matt, let me interrupt you right there. What do we take away from last week to this week? Because I did think this thought exercise was pretty interesting. Like far as guys who missed the cut last week or guys that played poorly, how did you approach guys?
Me personally, nothing. I literally don't. I took zero away from last week at all. Nothing. I don't think that course was indicative of anybody's skill set, really.
I think it's really all about the player. I don't really necessarily put too much into it. You know, if you did like one thing well, especially like if it was your irons or something like that, and you go back and you see, okay, how well have they been hitting them for the last 3 weeks? And if the U.S. Open was an addendum to that, then good. Then that means that they're hitting their approaches really well. So you could take that from it. But yeah, I'm not willing to say, okay, a guy missed the cut last week, so he's not going to play well at the Travelers. Totally different event here, I think, this time. And if anything, maybe some of the guys that finished a little bit down the board are who you want to, you know, guys that might have made the cut and finished 30th or 40th, or even guys that missed the cut. It's not necessarily, okay, load up on guys that were in the top 10 necessarily at the U.S. Open last week.
Yeah, so I think my only takeaway, and I asked that only because I can't remember event. I don't remember the last time I thought this way, but not that I stuck to this with my card. Like you said, Matt, I basically just tossed out all the results. But in my mind, definitely, if we're tossing out all the results, it's almost beneficial if you missed the cut last week. You just got the hell out of Oakmont, and you got extra time to prepare for this event now and didn't have to play through that crap. And then, Wes, to your point, if you were in the clubhouse already on Sunday and you didn't have to deal with all the weather and stuff that came through in the afternoon, like, I think that's a benefit. So not that I was really designing my card this week around that, but, man, it was definitely in the back of my mind that I do not mind playing these guys that missed cuts or looked bad last week.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, long tease for that too. Y'all are definitely going to see that I didn't give a shit. Like you're going to see in my betting card this week that I didn't care in the least bit what went on there. So, Kelly, as you were putting together your stats that you think matter this week and you're building your model, is there anything for you that was a little bit different? I mean, again, how did you take into account the driver stuff and off the tee stuff? How did you take into account, you know, approach? Because historically, if we kind of look at this, like, approach isn't really one of the major factors here. Mm-hmm. Weirdly enough, like for success at this course. And so how did you go about putting stuff together this week?
Yeah, pretty blended model for me this week, I would say. No distance really factored in at all, except I did factor in strokes gained off the tee a little bit. We know that does take into account some distance. So I guess mm-hmm. that would be my only distance. Otherwise, it was all accuracy stuff off the tee. Fairways, good drives, that type of stuff that I'm looking at. Again, just fairway finders that you're looking for this week. Strokes gained approach, like we always look at, it still matters a lot. But like you said, it is a little bit less important this week. And sprinkled in, like, the proximity 125 to 150. I didn't go heavy, like, on the ones around that, though. I think you could, and that's not a problem. We're really seeing, what is it, over 75% of approach shots coming under 175 yards. So I think just keep that in mind if you're at home handicapping this week. And then kind of looked at some of the aggressive approach stats. You know, greens and regulation is small, but then opportunities gained, looking at these guys that are going to really seek out the pins this week and be aggressive. And then it was par four scoring. Par fours a little bit, 400 to 450 yards. Wes, I know you like to build those in a lot. I'm sure that's something you factored in as well. And then it was, you know, around the green, scrambling, bogey avoidance, a lot of that stuff. And then heavier strokes gained putting, just went generic strokes gained putting. Didn't go with any of the specific grass types, with it being a blend this week. So strokes gained putting, and that's the whole model.
Yeah, same thing here.
How'd you put stuff together this week?
Because I think players are going to club down here, because not only the thick rough, but a lot of the fairways, kind of like the run out ends at a little bit over 300 yards. So it's not like you could smoke it 360 and be in the fairway and get like a big kick and it rolls, because they kind of bottleneck a little bit. So that's why you got to club down a little bit, because it's like, okay, why bomb it and, you know, hit it in rough and hit it into trouble and end up missing a fairway instead of, you know, hitting a three metal or hybrid or a long iron. So I used that. I used approach. 100 to 125, 100 to 25 to 150 for proximity. Use some birdie or better here, because the course has played easier the last 2 years. When Keegan Bradley won, it was minus 1.6 strokes under par was the average round. Last year, it was minus 2.37. So, you know, I know Pete Dye doesn't like to give birdie gimme opportunities, but there's plentiful out here. You're going to be able to shoot pretty low, and you'll see some low rounds out here. You'll see some 62s and 61s and 60s. We've seen a 58 here before, so that wouldn't shock me. I did strokes gained par four just in general, because they range anywhere from 296, which is that 15th I mentioned, to 481. So there's a lot of wide range. So I did strokes gained par four, did strokes gained around the green. Kelly mentioned it earlier, second toughest course over the last 5 years to gain around the green. So you got tight lies here in short grass around the greens, unlike last week, which is like chop it out of the thick stuff at Oakmont. So use that. Strokes gained putting, bent POA. You can go last 24, last 36. Keep in mind, it is more bent than POA, and this POA is less bumpy than what we see on the West Coast. And then kind of one, you know, sometimes I do one where it's strokes gained total on short courses or long courses, but I did strokes gained on Pete Dye, because I think even though there's different little intricacies, and obviously in different regions of the country are these courses, especially the ones you see regularly played on the PGA Tour, but the Pete Dye principles are the same. Hit toward the trouble off the tee dares you to do that, and you get a better spot going into the second shot into the green. You know, we talked about that at Harbortown a few weeks ago at the RBC Heritage. You play it on the other side, then it makes it a tougher second shot. So guys that do that, I think guys that play well on a Pete Dye tend to play well on multiple Pete Dye courses if you really look long term.
Yeah, the off the tee stuff for me, I did off the tee. I also did good drive, and then I also did a little bit of total driving. If you're, you know, again, if you are a little bit longer, but you can actually keep it in the fairway, then I want to at least see that. But I didn't factor it in a ton. It wasn't very high percentage-wise. I did do strokes gained on easy courses and on short courses. I think that there are guys that just play better on courses like this where you pretty much know how it's going to play. Hit the fairway, hit a wedge, and go in there and see what you can do. I did birdie or better gained against the field, and then just a little bit of bogey avoidance and some scrambling stuff, because I do think that with these small greens, there will be some chances where people need to kind of get up and down to do all that. But that's basically the model for me this week. The least I did on approach maybe in quite a while, because we have seen here that historically approach has been less than tour average as far as being indicative of success here. So obviously it has to be in the model, but I didn't factor it near as heavily as I normally do with stuff. Here's a shocker, guys. Scotty Scheffler's number one.
Yeah.
If he isn't, you're doing something wrong, I think.
Yeah. Here's a shocker. He's number one in the model. I mean, like you said, Kelly, maybe you can get an over 3-1 out there or something. If you just want to fire one bullet and walk away, there is motivation, obviously, here for him. This is still a signature event. It's going to be $4 million first place. Like, there's all of that. So, sure, but, man. I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. I can't do it.
Yeah, like, I know. I considered it more this week than I really have in the past, though, because I can't. Anybody got any interest?
You know, when I saw it, I think there was an exchange that put him at 16, actually, and I saw actually some 14s. Now it's drifted down. I think a noted tipster recommended him. That is a big price for the guy. So, you know, I can maybe at least understand why, where it's like, hey, I just got to play the price, man. You never see him at this kind of price. And I don't think he's going to continue to slump forever. I think, you know, he's still in that little, you know, weird spot where it's like, man, I just accomplished, you know, what I wanted to accomplish for my career, finally got it done after 10 years. And then he gets a little bit of heat from the media where it's like, okay, I'm used to the adoring coverage that I get, and now I'm not getting it, and he's been a little salty about it. So I don't think that's going to last forever for Rory. Now, I think when Rory goes over in July to prepare for the Open, you know, there he's going to be much shorter price, obviously, but the Scottish, like those events, Irish Open, those events, I think is maybe where he's going to get right, maybe more so than here.
Yeah, I just to that point, Wes, I don't think I care to look at him all that closely until then. We brought that up last week. I thought the number last week said the same thing you just said, right? Where it was like, hey, man, like if you want to bet him over, we're looking at 12-1 on Rory McIlroy with what he's done this season. Like, go ahead, but man, I don't know what's going on. He's clearly got some off the course stuff going on. I'm not gonna guess at some stuff here, but it is. It's not been great play, and the approach numbers are just so bad right now. I mean, consecutive tournaments losing strokes on approach. My point of bringing up Rory is, okay, I think there's just even more win equity for Scotty Scheffler at the top of the board. Morikawa really hasn't put it all together yet this year. I think Xander's there. He would be the number two guy for me this week behind Scotty Scheffler. But, yeah, I don't know. I think the top of the board is a little flawed, so I don't hate it if you wanted to just bet Scheffler and call it a day this week. I considered it.
Yeah, I mean, kind of the same with me. If somebody said they wanted to do it, I'm not going to talk you off of it. It's this course.
We'll get to my wheel of losers momentarily.
Yeah. Oh, no, well, yeah, me too, but it's like... Yeah, I mean, like, it's like you look here and it's just like, I mean, okay, it's a course where guys might be able to just go out and throw darts at the pin. Who do you want to throw darts at the pin? I mean, Scotty Scheffler is like the guy you want throwing darts at the pin, you know? I mean, so maybe there's a way to get in on him live, you know? Maybe he starts a little bit poorly or something, and we can...
I just like that's the one where I'm like, Matt, you get taxed so heavily now to try to get in on him live. It's like, we used to say that and mean it, and now I feel like we say it, and it's like, it's not really possible. Like, it's like you're just going to be further into the tournament.
That's true.
Like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like I've been monitoring that all year, and it's just like,
we can't
this
be
is,
like,
this
oh,
is
Scotty
not
Scheffler,
a
he's
bet, like, right now at this break.
He's drifted up to plus 310 now. Now's the time to get in. Right? We moved him a whole 10 cents.
it's really that, Wes. Yeah. It's crazy, man. Like, I don't, like, I feel like the past couple tournaments, it's like, but, like, oh, he's got to be a guy. Like, I tried to buy in on him multiple times during the U.S. Open. I'm like, I can't. I'm not playing that price. I'm not playing that.
All right, so it was not Scottie Scheffler. It was not Rory McIlroy. Maybe it'll be one of these other guys at the top. And, Wes, I think
I'm going to go against Scottie Scheffler again because that worked out for me last year at the Tom Kim 50-1 ticket that lost in the playoff, unfortunately. So hopefully we get one back. We're owed one here in Hartford. I did start with Colin Morikawa at 18-1. T23 at the U.S. Open, but, Matt, you mentioned it at the top, lead and strokes gain approach, lead tee to green, lead and strokes gain ball striking, second greens in regulation. So why the hell did he finish T23? Well, he lost 9 strokes with the putter, or nearly 9 strokes. Worst performance on the green in nearly 5 years, and his worst ever since being a member of the PGA Tour. But prior to last week at Oakmont, he had been gaining on the greens in the last 3 starts. He gained at the Memorial, he gained at the PGA, and then the start before that. So I'm willing to say, and it's very hard to back a guy that putted that poorly last week, but I'm willing to say, okay, it was a little bit of an outlier. It has to be an outlier, considering it was his worst ever. So he's only played here twice, by the way, because keep in mind, this is a signature event. So, like, when you look at the form sheet, when you go year by year, 2020, 2019, 18, 17, and go left to right, you'll see some guys that do play here every year. Colin Morikawa is not one of them. Colin Morikawa is here because it's now a signature event, not because he was a regular visitor to Hartford. So that's something to keep in mind with form. I think he was 13th last year, so he doesn't have a lot of finishes here. But this is a course you would think he would do great on because it's not too long. It relies a lot on precision, and that's the name of his game. He's the best iron. I think he's the second best iron player in the world behind Scottie Scheffler. So Colin Morikawa, 18-1. And then we go with the familiar face, a guy that's actually won here back in 2023. How about Keegan Bradley at 35-1, who was fourth in the field last week for strokes gained around the green. Great history here. I mentioned the win. Also was runner-up here in 2019. Prior to the U.S. Open, he was top 10 in the last two events. He was 8th at the PGA, 7th at the Memorial. Now, I think with Keegan Bradley, he is in an interesting position as the U.S. Ryder Cup captain. We're all, by the way, J.J. Spahn. We didn't mention that. He pretty much locked up his Ryder Cup spot. They don't leave the U.S. Open champion or a major winner off the Ryder Cup team. They certainly didn't do it with Brian Harman a couple years ago, even though he didn't have the experience. So Spahn might get the auto qualifying spot. But Keegan Bradley is kind of in the mix where he can make his own team, but I think in order to justify either selecting himself or even to qualify on points, he's got to win. And this looks like a likely place or one of the more likely places for him to do so. So Keegan Bradley, 35-1. Russell Henley, I did not get the best number on this, 40-1. I think there were some 50s and maybe even a 60 out there. Yeah, there was a lot of good numbers out there, really? And I totally missed it. Just catching up from my trip back from Indianapolis, but grinded out of top 10 last week at the U.S. Open, top 10 in 3 of the last 5 majors. Biggest win of his career earlier this year where he won the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill back in March. He's trying to make that Ryder Cup team for the first time, and he was actually in that last spot because they take the top 6 in points for the American team, and then the other 6 are captain's picks from Keegan Bradley. So Henley, I still think, is in good shape, but look, you certainly want to make a push and make the biggest impression that you can. He's been in the top 3, actually. I was reading this. He's been in the top 3 heading into the final round 3 times on 7 appearances, even though he doesn't really have a lot of, you know, he has a lot of finishes around 10th, 12th, and whatnot here. He's a much better player now than in those years. So Russell Henley, 40-1. And then I'm going to do it again. Maybe 5 weeks of a sample size is enough for me. Cameron Young, 50-1, who was T4 last week at the U.S. Open, best major in 3 years. Top 7 in 3 of his last 5 events. I think his game is kind of coming around again. Like, you know, when you show the profiles from Rick Rungood, from Rick Gaiman, you see a lot of green there. You don't see a lot of red in terms of losing strokes lately. 9th here at the Travelers last year. So He hooked me back in again, Cameron Young. I think this is a place. He by the way, is a Northeast guy. Was born in New York State. So, you know, nearby home, I guess, if you want to call it the closest thing to a home game. So I bought in on him, and he'll probably miss the cut badly, but he does have 5 weeks of really good form coming in here. Also at 50-1, Daniel Berger, who has not played the Travelers, by the way, since 2019, but was runner-up here in 2017 when he lost to a peak Jordan Spieth, when Jordan was really one of the best players in the world, and then was fifth here in 2016 the year before. Pretty good on Pete Dye's. He was third last time out at the RBC Heritage at Harbortown back in April. That, of course, was I know a win for Kelly. He had Justin Thomas over Andrew Novak in that playoff. So Berger, pretty good Pete Dye player. I'm willing to chance him at 50-1. And then I went with the long shot, Tom Hoagie, 125-1, who missed the cut on the number at the U.S. Open last weekend. But if you look at his strokes gained ball striking, he gained 4.5 strokes over two rounds, which would have rated top five in the field. So that tells you, you know, not so great on the greens. Third here last year, and he's a guy that's such a good iron player. We always see him. He's always in our models whenever we use approach. Such a premium on iron play. I think that's right in his wheelhouse. Remember, the one that I was fortunate enough to be aboard on was in 2022 at Pebble Beach, his lone PGA Tour victory. So another short course, under 7,000 yards, premium on some iron shots. I think that fits Tom Hoagie here just fine, 125-1.
It is.
I dig it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I know. I made a couple of those clicks as well. I just we'll see. Kelly, where did you end up?
Well, I'm realizing after Wes just kind of ran through his stuff too that I just made a big deal about not taking anything away from last week, but I totally did, because there are names that are at the top of my model that I'm like, nope, I got no interest. And you know what, Berger? I'm just kind of burned out on you, bro. I'm just burned out on you. And I think, I don't know if this is the perfect course for him, but at that number, I can't hate on it, Wes. But I skipped him. But he was, I'm talking guys that were top five in my model. That is Berger with one of them. And right around that area, again, would be one Shane Lowry. But after that mess at the U.S. Open, ah, man, I want to say I'm going back to the well with him, but it's been so many weeks in a row of me on Shane Lowry, and I don't know if he's going to be able to get it back.
You saddle up, baby, I'm riding again. Saddle it up. I'm riding again with both of them. I don't care.
Oh, both of them. There
both
you go.
Of them.
All right, there we
I
go.
Don't care.
Wow.
Let's go. Saddle wow. it up.
Both well, they rated out very highly for me. That's what I got. I just don't have the mental stamina to go back to both those guys. I've been betting them so much this year. Well, let's see. So I'll go to one of my losers that I did bet last week, did miss the cut, and I will go back to, so I'll join you, Matt, in the at least the losers aspect of it. It is one Sepp Straka. Who
bring
just...
him on again for me, too. All of the lovable losers. I don't care. All the guys that played like ass. Just let's go. Let's fire it up. They got to leave early. They got to go hang out, do whatever. Let's go.
I mean, Shane had like a solid 24 hours to just grab a bottle of whiskey if he wanted to and just drink this off and still be fine for this week.
Yeah.
So it's really, yeah, you're right. I really shouldn't be ignoring it as much as I am. I can't go back to clicking those guys this week. So Sepp is where I started. I'm on him 35-1. Man, I really like Keegan this week. I do, Wes. Man, a number like the all I'm going to say, 35-1, I'm okay with. You get into something right around there, I'm okay with that. I didn't end up betting it. I still might add him. I'm going to see where his number moves. I saw some 25-1s on him this afternoon, though. And I'm like, I think that
25-1.
No. There's no bigger Keegan Bradley supporter on the planet than this guy right here. This man. Yeah, not at 25-1, exactly, Wes. So I do think that is, there's numbers come into play and they matter. That is not something that I'm going to bet into. So 35-1, I'm cool with that. Might be adding that to my card. I'm going to watch where he moves this week. I did want to mention him because I do like Keegan this week. I think my favorite play this week is Russell Henley. I'm with you on that one, Wes. I think this is a guy's game that really fits well here. 36 off the tee over the last 16 rounds, a little bit concerning, but we know he's not a huge distance guy and really checks the boxes for kind of everything else we're looking at, you know, around the green, on approach, driving accuracy, scrambling ability, has got that all here. So really like Russell Henley this week. He's an outright play for me, as well as a top 20 bet on him. Also played a top 20 on Sepp Straka as well. So going back to the well, pretty heavy on those guys. I feel like this is Wes's dude. I'm going to borrow him for the week, Wes. Nick Taylor? Like, Nick Taylor, what you been doing lately, man? Like he's putting together a string of quality results here. Last three tournaments, dude's on a heater. T23 last week, T13 at the Canadian Open, fourth at the Memorial. The putter is red hot right now, and going to a tournament where you're going to need to be able to putt well. And there are not many guys we could say this about on the PGA Tour. Nick Taylor, though. I mean, he's got W's on his resume and a whole lot of miscuts. When we usually look for more consistent player types, but this guy wins every now and then. So 100-1, I'm in on Nick Taylor at that long bomb price. Top fives as well, and all those outrights kind of to play the each way model that Matt sets up oh so well. And then top 20s, I already said Straka and Henley. Also went to I'll go right to back to Tommy Fleetwood, top 20 this week. You're getting plus money on him. Top 20, Ty's playing full. I love that bet this week. I think he's a perfect example of a dude that missed the cut. I'm not worried about him at all. When you're talking, you know, you talked about Colin Morikawa with this, Wes, right? It's the same player type, right? Find the fairway, great approach player, set yourself up, go up there, knock down some putts. I think you can put up a quality result this week. And then a guy who plays Pete Dye course as well, was on the front page of the leaderboard for a lot of last week and then before he fell off. Siwoo Kim hasn't had a whole lot of success here, but another guy that you would think sets up well for this course. So a top 20 play there. Matt, give me 1 minute. I see you're going crazy over a couple names. Love Siwoo's fit here. Played a top 20 on him. Also played him in a matchup over JJ Spawn where he's the dog. Don't know if I really get that one, but that's over at Station, so if you're interested in Matthew Brown. Siwoo over JJ Spawn. I played Xander over Rory in a matchup. I do think Xander is my second-rated guy this week, and then I played Nick Taylor over Mackenzie
Hughes.
Yeah,
we've got a lot of fading of JJ Spawn in the matchup, no surprise, because he's all over the media. I saw him on the Today Show this morning. So having to do all that, and when you got a guy that's not used to doing that, is there a little bit of a hangover there? And he's still a favorite, I believe, in town at a few places over Cameron Young. So if you're interested in Cameron Young, and if you bought in like I did, plus 115, plus 120 is out there.
Yep, love it.
Yeah, so I just have outside of Sepp Straka, who has one, you know, multiple times, I just got a whole card full of losers. So I just saw you. I just got a whole bunch of losers. So
we know Berger and Lowry.
I started at Straka, 35-1. That's the shortest number on my card. I went back to Justin Thomas. The fine folks at Circa yesterday had Justin Thomas at 40-1.
Ooh.
And so
he's maybe the most interesting player to me this week because I cashed on him earlier this season. I think there is something to Justin Thomas on these shorter courses right now with where his game is at, Matt, and
hit a few fairways and then he can just hit wedges in outside behind Scotty. Then he's like the wedge player you want. Right. I mean, it's like Scotty and then him, you want like him hitting wedges. And so went to Justin Thomas again. That number's 40-1 here. I think it's gotten hammered elsewhere, like rest of country. So I don't know if I would be playing. Let me see. Yeah, it's like it's 28. It's 25 at MGM. So like there's been some action on Justin Thomas. But again, his profile fits very, very well here for what we're looking at. It's like, hey, go out. You don't have to crush it off the tee. And then you've got like, you're going in with wedges and nine irons, you know, like just do that, like be in and excel at what you're really, really good at. So I went ahead and took the 40-1 bait there on Justin Thomas. Yes. Lowry, Berger, a couple of losers.
Throw them in there. Look at the putter from JT recently. Damn.
Yeah.
That is gaining with the putter in eight straight events. Wow.
Yeah, he's actually figured out how to make a putt or two here and there. So, Justin Thomas, like I said, Lowry and Berger already in the account. I don't need to say much more on them. You guys already have all that laid out. Obviously, I'm not worried about Lowry's performance last week, and I'm certainly not worried about Berger finishing way down the leaderboard. Not really. That course was not really laid out for Daniel Berger, so I'm not worried about that. So here's where things get interesting. I played the Woo as well. I've got the Siwoo in there. Played the Woo. So Woo at 55-1 from an outright standpoint there, Kelly. It is it's a model play for me. I mean, like the model loves the model loves the woo. You know, anytime we get these courses where we're not worried about distance and it's like, hey, go fire at the pins, and like if you fall off, then you can scramble. I mean, the woo is number one in this field in scrambling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, I wanted to mention that about Keegan, too. I mean, it is Keegan and Siwoo Kim that are kind of right near the top. So if we are devaluing approach a little bit this week and around the green plays, what we're really looking at, those two guys are kind of right at the top right now.
Yeah. The woo is right there with that. And then also just, you know, like I said, I put in some emphasis on these like shorter courses and easy courses and stuff. And he's inside the top 30 on these like short courses, easy courses, things like that. So I did put in the woo. Now, the interesting thing to me is it's a leave off for right now, but I do need to mention Jordan Spieth is 7th, 6th, and 5th in three different versions of models that I ran. And you go in and you look, and it's like, I know the results have not necessarily been eye-popping with Jordan Spieth, but it's like, can we ignore the fact that, like, it's a pretty good stat profile for him of late? Like,
yeah, it's damn good. I've actually bet him a couple times, and everybody knows how much I hate the guy.
Like, it's a pretty good stat profile. Like, could he pop? Like, is it possible that for 1 week he pops? I don't know. I don't have it in there yet, but, man, you can find him at, like, 50 out there.
I mean, being fair, Jordan Spieth is having a significantly better season than it feels like he has had in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you've got the profile pulled up for the people that are watching on YouTube. Like, there's not a lot of red. There's a lot more green than there is red.
Yeah. The around the green play is great. If we're going to emphasize that this week, that's big. Wes, you dropped out for 1 second, but I brought that up about Keegan, Siwoo kind of being right up there around the green play this week. And yeah, Spieth's up there as well.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm 100% going to add him, but maybe there's some way that I'm going to figure out how to play Jordan this week, because it's just, I can't argue with the numbers. I can't argue with what I'm seeing right there. And it's, I think it's because he hadn't really, like, made a run at it. But, I mean, Kelly, yeah. See, T12, T14, T18, 4th, T7, T20, like, he's around. It's like you just need him to pop. Like, I mean, it's like one of those things, like these lurkers, like run hot with something 1 week and you're going to get there, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm just looking back at my bets. I bet him at the Memorial. I bet him at the Charles Schwab. I actually bet Spieth a couple times this year. I bet him at the PGA in a couple matchups. Yeah, man.
Well, look, at Craig Ranch. Like, take Craig Ranch, for example, where he's 4th outright. If he could have just run good with the putter, he wins. But he didn't gain anything with the putter, you know? Like, if he runs good with the putter, he wins. Like, you know, it's just he had nothing there. So it's just, I don't know. It's something we just need him to pop. So I'm just throwing it out there 50-1.
I have no idea where he's trending at right now. Like, Wes, I don't know where you think, if we think Jordan Spieth's on the way up or if he's kind of hit that ceiling. Or no. I don't. That's the part I don't know with him, right? The play's been great this year, but I don't really know where he's going from here.
Yeah, because he hasn't played poorly, but he hasn't been great either, you know? So you're kind of like waiting. He's just been kind of consistent where he's still, I think, searching for that breakout performance, because he's one of those ones, a lot of the popular things that we've seen on GolfX or Golf Twitter this week is now people kind of projecting, okay, who's the Ryder Cup team going to be? Now that J.J. Spahn basically took a spot, even though he might have been considered for a captain's pick, but he essentially locked his ticket with the U.S. Open. So Spieth is kind of one of those, you know, in the mix. It reminds me of like when we're getting into the NFL playoff chase, right, where they have the in the hunt on the right side of the graphic. And that's where I think Jordan Spieth is right now, where there's opportunity for him to play himself on. But I think, you know, he's got to show something. Even if though his experience is a feather in his cap, you've just got a muck of players that I think are going to be for those non-automatic spots, certainly.
Yeah, I would say, Matt, I'm lucky that he didn't rate so highly for me this week that I that I couldn't ignore him. I did. He was at least far enough down that I didn't really have to think about him too hard this week. But man, he's been up there for most of the past couple months for me.
Yeah, the bomb that I threw in, mainly it was just because of the model play. I did throw a Bud Collie ticket at 110 to 1.
I almost played him, and he's the one that worries me of the long odd gods that I didn't play.
Yeah, so he's 14th in one, 17th in another, and then there was one where I took out the stat that he was worst at just because I wanted to see how much it would affect. Because he's like his total driving, he's like 56th in this field or something or whatever in that. And so when I de-emphasized total driving, he went all the way up to 13th. And so anyway, Bud Collie at 110, obviously 110 to 1 guy is not supposed to win, but he modeled out way better. He modeled out way better than his odds dictated here. So, you know, not the greatest last couple of tournaments for sure, but
tore it up in Texas though.
Yeah, but you can see like there are
Florida.
Yeah, he's got the game anyway, maybe to tackle one of these easy courses. So 110 to 1 on the old Bud Collie, but that's where I sit right now. Like the whole typical disclaimer here, guys, I will have some sort of placement bet on every single one of the outright guys that I have. So there's that's in there, but I don't know if I'm going to add any separate placement bets because there wasn't anybody that I loved outside of, I mean, Fleetwood and Henley are really high up there in the model. So, I mean, I guess I could always add them like top 30 guys, top 40 guys, and they'll probably do that this week. But outside of that, I pretty much bet everybody that I had interest in.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Wes. It's definitely Berger and Lowry for me will be the two that if I miss out on, my model tells me I'm a moron.
Right.
Sam Burns, too.
Yeah, and I did consider a little Patrick Cantlay, just because not that he's playing great, he's not, but top five here. I looked at Cantlay on a form sheet here, because he's one of the guys that, like I mentioned how Morikawa didn't play here very much, you know, now it's a signature of any does. Cantlay has played like here every year for like the last 8 or 9 years. He has never finished outside the top 15. And he was fifth and he was fourth last year. So it's like, does he finally get one? But I don't want to be a slave to that necessarily, because he's just kind of been like, you know, Randy Jackson would say on American Idol, it was just kind of all right for me, you know, and that's what Patrick Cantlay has been. He has not really been elite. Now, you know, he's a guy that I think he's going to have a big tournament at some point this summer. Maybe it's going to be in one of the FedEx Cup events. I don't know, but I feel like he's going to have one. Hopefully it's not this week, because I did not bet him. I'll probably use him in a placement though.
Yeah, I am not the biggest course history guy out there, but my God, if you are watching at home right now, that is a pretty, pretty incredible 7-year run right there for one guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm willing to let him beat me though, I get.
Me too.
I can't.
And I'm probably the guy that backs him the most of any of the three of us, so.
Yeah. If Wes isn't willing to play him, then I'm not either.
Yeah, really, that's right.
So lock him in to win.
There it is. I like that. If Wes is not willing to play him, then I'm not either.
So really, though, what we're talking about, though, is the by Tommy Fleetwood, Sepp Straka, Russell Henley, Siwoo Kim are all top 19 bets. That's really what they really are. It's just, you know, one spot's already taken up.
Yeah.
That's like fine.
All right. Well, for the DFS players out there, like I said, Henley modeled well for me. Fleetwood modeled well for me. Going down, we've talked about all these other guys. Alex Noren actually modeled well for me from a DFS perspective. If you want to play him, he's cheap. He's 6,500 to kind of round out a lineup. Aaron Rye, 7,500 over at DraftKings. He modeled well for me as well. So if you're kind of like rounding out your lineups after putting some studs in there, those guys are a little bit on the cheaper side of things. But those are really the only guys that we hadn't talked about. Literally everybody else in the model, either y'all bet them or I bet them or whatever. There was like everybody else like kind of made the discussion here.
No, I got one. I've got one we haven't really talked about. And apparently this podcast hates this guy and can't really get on board with him, because I don't think many of us have bet him much over these past few weeks. Ben Griffin?
The Griff. Yeah, Griff's 11 and one of mine 10.
Am I forgetting? Yeah. Have you boys been betting him? Because I sure haven't.
They haven't really this
I
year.
Bet Griffin
last
like
year,
2 years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, like last year.
Yeah, like, I bet him like two
a lot
years
in the
ago.
Fall series. Yes, but you wonder when he's going to cool off. But maybe this is just the summer of Ben Griffin, because that's a guy certainly wanting to play his way in the Ryder Cup mix that you would have never thought going into the year. Okay, this guy's going to be on the American Ryder Cup team, but. Do I feel like there are 12 players playing better than this guy from the United States of America right now? No.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you, Wes. But, man, we all keep just skipping by him each week. I mean, say that.
I mean, I guess, like, I didn't pay attention to earlier on in the year. T4 in Mexico back in February. T4 at the Cognizant back in March.
He had an awesome season.
Then he won the team event, the Zurich.
Which is easy to write off.
Yeah.
You say, fine, it's a team event, whatever.
But you still
really
got
like,
yeah, to go perform, right?
Yeah.
And then.
I'm just trying to give the reasons why we hadn't really
and
considered
And then T8
the
at the PGA. T8 at the PGA. He won the Charles Schwab, second at the Memorial, and then T10 at the U.S. Open. Like, he might be having this, like, second best season to friggin' Scotty.
Just a whole season of us ignoring it, dude. But, yep. Not the Ben Griffin podcast. If you are looking for the pro Ben Griffin podcast, Long Shots is not the spot. I love that we just had that conversation, because I was thinking about that earlier. I'm like, man, this guy keeps popping and I keep ignoring him. And I'm like, I don't think Matt or Wes has really bet him all that much either.
Well, maybe he needs a hard course, because he was T40 at Valero. He was T46 at the Truist. Like, maybe he needs a hard course. Like, the easy courses aren't for him.
He
missed the cut at Craig Ranch.
What a loser.
Like, maybe he needs a hard course. He doesn't like these easy courses.
Oh, man.
That's what we'll go with.
Ben Griffin's getting a W this week. There you go.
All these plays will be up over at VSiN.com/picks. And anything we get added, of course, follow us on the Twitter machine. And then also over on the picks page as well. You can get started for as low as $9.99. We got $199 for a full year special, where you can also get a book if you want to get a book about football. So that is that's part of the deal. So go in, take advantage of all of that stuff. Again, VSiN.com/subscribe for that. For Kelly, for Wes, I am Matt. Good luck on all your travelers' bets.